sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
My opening serve on the sunny side of sports is U.S. Open tennis. First round action is getting underway at the year's final Grand Slam event in New York City. The defending men's and women's singles champions are Novak Djokovic of Serbia and Flavia Panetta of Italy. The 34-year-old Panetta, however, will not defend her title because she retired at the end of the 2015 season. Our VOA tennis fans will remember, at the 2015 U.S. Open, Panetta defeated Roberta Vinci in the first all-Italian Grand Slam final. Vinci upset American star Serena Williams in three sets in the semifinals, ending Serena's quest to win all four Grand Slam trophies in a calendar year. This year, Serena lost in the final of the French Open and the Australian Open, and she won the title at Wimbledon, her 22nd career Grand Slam singles championship, equaling the mark held by the retired German Steffi Graf. Serena Williams is the top seed among the women in New York, but there are question marks about her form. She's pulled out of two recent tournaments with shoulder inflammation, and Serena is also coming off a disappointing performance at the Rio Olympics in Brazil. Serena, the defending gold medalist in both women's singles and doubles, was a heavy favorite to retain those titles, but she and her older sister, Venus, lost their opening Olympic match in doubles. And Serena also lost in the third round in Rio in singles. Meanwhile, Olympic champion Andy Murray of Britain, who won his second consecutive gold medal in men's singles in Rio, is seated second in New York behind Novak Djokovic, and Stan Wawrinka of Switzerland is seated third. On the women's side, as I mentioned, Serena Williams is the top seed. Angelique Kerber of Germany is seated second, and Spain's Garbiñe Muguruza is seated third. More than $46 million in prize money is at stake at the U.S. Open, making it the most lucrative of the four Grand Slam tournaments. Of that total, a record $3.5 million will go to both the men's and women's singles champions. The women's singles final is scheduled for Saturday, September 10th, and the men's singles final the following day, September 11th. And for those VOA tennis fans keeping score, a total of 16 courts will be used at the USTA Billie Jean King National Tennis Center in New York. The hard court event features three main show courts, Grandstand, Louis Armstrong Stadium, and Arthur Ashe Stadium. Arthur Ashe Stadium is the largest tennis-specific stadium in the world, with a capacity of almost 24,000. The stadium also features a new retractable roof, completed earlier this year, which will be used in case of rain. As for Louis Armstrong Stadium, well, the facility is scheduled to be demolished after this U.S. Open. It's named after the famous American jazz musician who lived nearby and who also died in 1971. The legacy of Louis Armstrong will continue to live on, though, including on our Voice of America airwaves. Louis recorded this promo for us at our VOA headquarters.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.
Sonny welcomes your comments. You can send your emails to Sonny at the following address. Sonny@voanews.com. Sonny is spelled S-O-N-N-Y. For those of you who don't have email access, write this down. The Sunny Side of Sports, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest, Room 1613, Washington, D.C., 20237. We appreciate your contributions, so drop us a line when you get a chance.
Belgian golfer Thomas Peters has won the third European title of his career. The 24-year-old Peters won the Made in Denmark tournament over the weekend. Reporter Mark Tompkins tells us more from Farso, Denmark.
Belgian's Thomas Peters has won Made in Denmark in the most dramatic fashion, having finished with three birdies in a row to go to 17 under par. In the final stages, four players were locked at 15 under, but Peters, who almost holed his tee shot on the par 3 16th, rolled in a birdie putt. He rolled in a birdie at 17 and got just the fifth birdie of the day on the par 4 18th to take his first title since winning in Holland last year. Second place finish in the Czech Republic last week, and he now has his eye very much on a Ryder Cup wildcard pick. Darren Clark will announce those early next week. Bradley Dredge finished in second place, 16 under par for him. A birdie on the last couldn't drag him into a playoff with Peters. And David Lipsky and Adrian Otaegi from Spain tied third on 15 under par. Spare a thought for Joachim Lagergren. He was level at the top of the leaderboard, having birdied four in a row going down 18. But a lost ball from his tee shot saw him finish with a triple bogey 7, and he had to settle for fifth place. But it's Peters, the champion. He wins his first event of the year.
I really needed a good finish. I was one back, walking to the green on 16, and hit a great shot there, but I knew I needed to make at least one more, and to finish with two more birdies was pretty cool. I'm really happy with this one. That was one of my goals, to, you know, just have one every year, just so you know you're improving and that, you know, you can win, and that's very important. So, very, very happy.
A very, very happy Thomas Peters. The Belgian golfer won the Made in Denmark tournament over the weekend. And thanks to Mark Tompkins for that report from Denmark. And some personal notes about Made in Denmark winner Thomas Peters. Thomas studied here in the United States at the University of Illinois. He also played for the school's golf team. And in 2012, Thomas won the National Collegiate Athletic Association Golf Championship. The following year, 2013, he turned professional. Elsewhere, 26-year-old American Patrick Reed has won the Barclays Golf Tournament in Farmingdale, New York. Reed finished at 9 under par, 279, putting him one shot ahead of Argentina's Emiliano Grillo and American Sean O'Hare. Reed won a first-place prize of $1,530,000. Patrick also earned an automatic spot on the U.S. Ryder Cup team. The Barclays tournament was the final event that Americans could earn 8 automatic berths on the team. Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, Phil Mickelson, Jimmy Walker, and Brooks Koepka already had clinch spots. Brant Snedeker joined Reed and Zach Johnson in locking up the final spots.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
Voice of America, VOA, Washington.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
The U.S. men's national soccer team opened a training camp Monday morning in Jacksonville, Florida, to prepare for upcoming 2018 World Cup qualifying matches against St. Vincent and the Grenadines and Trinidad and Tobago. The Americans will play on the road against St. Vincent on Friday, September 2nd, and then 4 days later, they'll host Trinidad and Tobago in Jacksonville. The USA's German coach, Jürgen Klinsmann, has named a 26-man roster for the two qualifiers. 19 of the players competed for the USA team that reached the semifinals of the Copa America Centenario tournament in June. Now, Klinsmann will be without two of his regulars in the attack, Clint Dempsey and Giassi Zardes. Dempsey is sidelined indefinitely with an irregular heartbeat. He currently has 52 goals for the USA, putting him 5 goals behind the now-retired Landon Donovan for the U.S. career record. Zardes, meanwhile, is scheduled to undergo a MRI exam after suffering an undisclosed injury Saturday when he was playing for the Los Angeles Galaxy in a scoreless draw with the Vancouver Whitecaps. Klinsmann's core of strikers includes Jozy Altidore, who missed Copa America with a hamstring injury but has scored 5 goals in his past 7 appearances for Major League Soccer's Toronto FC club. Klinsmann will also be using Bobby Wood, who scored in his Bundesliga debut for Hamburg on Saturday, and 21-year-old Jordan Morris, who was a teammate of Clint Dempsey's on the Seattle Sounders in Major League Soccer. Morris has scored 8 goals in his first season in MLS. Turning to auto racing, German Formula One driver Nico Rosberg won Sunday's Belgian Grand Prix, a chaotic race that featured bumping, jostling, exploding tires, and wrecked cars. Rosberg, behind the wheel of a Mercedes, finished about 14 seconds ahead of Australia's Daniel Ricciardo, who was driving for Red Bull Tag Heuer. Rosberg's Mercedes teammate, Lewis Hamilton, was third, more than 27 seconds back, and Lewis still leads this year's Formula One point standings. First, we'll hear from the winner, Nico Rosberg.
It's been great, of course, to get the win today on this special track. You know, it's a legendary track, but Lewis starting from the back, of course, made it a lot easier this weekend, and I'm sure he's going to be back in Monza, and it's going to be a big battle as always.
Meanwhile, the second place finisher, Daniel Ricciardo, clearly enjoyed the big Formula One battle in Belgium.
It was cool, you know, obviously it was pretty messed up at the start. There was a lot of virtual safety cars and then the red flag, but we knew we had a bit of damage actually from the first corner, but we fixed the front wing and then got back out. And I mean, it was a bit of a race by myself, but obviously I enjoyed the pace, and obviously to keep Lewis behind was a good achievement today.
Daniel Ricciardo kept Lewis Hamilton behind him in Belgium, but Hamilton, a 3-time Formula One champion, doesn't sound too disappointed.
The team did an amazing job this weekend. I changed 3 engines, so I'm actually ahead of these guys now on engines, which is a good thing, thanks to the team. And just a remarkable day. What a beautiful weather, great crowd, and great race.
That's British star Lewis Hamilton speaking after his third-place finish in Sunday's Belgian Grand Prix. A South Sudanese athlete who participated at the recent Olympics in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, is calling on his government to do more to support sportsmen and sportswomen to enable them to perform better at the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo. Santino Kenyi competed for South Sudan in the men's 1500 meters event. He says the South Sudanese Olympic team did not prepare enough when they left Juba earlier this month to try to win at the Rio Games. Sports officials in Juba say they'll double their efforts to ensure the athletes are better prepared ahead of Tokyo 2020. Tito Justin reports from Juba.
This year, South Sudan participated for the first time ever in the Olympics, a big excitement to South Sudanese nationwide. South Sudan's flag was raised in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, on August the 4th by Vice President James Waniga, who accompanied the three South Sudanese athletes. Neither Margaret Rumat Hassan, who competed in the 200-meter women's race, nor Santino Kenyi, who competed in the 1500-meter men's race, made it beyond the qualifying round. Gor Mariel participated in the men's marathon, which did not have a qualifying round. Kenyi says he is hopeful that with more financial support, South Sudanese athletes will have a better showing in the 2020 Olympics.
Our challenges are really there, and we know we will overcome them in South Sudan. Like the track we don't have in South Sudan. And also, we went here, we did not prepare us. We did not prepare ourselves well when we are going for the competition. So I'm going to start my training from now, but I need also support. Like the shoes, like the clothes. Yeah, this thing has to be there, because when you come from the training, you have to change. So you have to eat well, you train well, you see, and you sleep in the right time. That is what is called training.
Kenyi says the South Sudan Olympics Committee should transport athletes to the highlands of Kenya or Ethiopia for better training. South Sudan Olympic Committee President Wilson Deng says, although none of the athletes medaled, the Olympics competition was not all in vain.
Our athletes got exposed, and I'm sure they will have a very good training. I would also announce it to Athletics Federation that one of your athletes has been invited by Italian Athletic Federation to go there for a visit.
Atong Dimach of the Japan International Cooperation Agency, or JICA, which has supported the government of South Sudan in various sectors since its independence in 2011, says Japan will continue to support South Sudanese athletes.
This is not the end. As you all know, Olympic 2020 is coming and it's going to be in Japan. And on behalf of JICA, I'd like to reconfirm that JICA is very committed to support South Sudan team. And then also for the 2020 Olympic, the government of Japan has just launched a project called Sport for Tomorrow. And under this project, South Sudan will also be included in it.
The International Olympic Committee recognized South Sudan as a member nation in August 2015, despite the country's ongoing conflict. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
I encourage our VOA listeners to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page.
Voice of America!
Time to talk social media trends in sports. And joining us once again here in Studio 22 is my VOA colleague, Doug Bernard. Sporty greetings, Doug.
And back to you, Sonny.
What's trending in the sports world on this Monday?
Not surprising for so many big events coming up that there is a lot of chatter out there on social media. The first story that's really getting a lot of attention and a lot of good and bad attention is this story about Colin Kaepernick. Now, he's the quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers. He's 29 years old, led his team to the Super Bowl. They didn't win, but, a very well-respected quarterback. Always had a way of attracting attention, good and bad, and he's done it again. Mm. So Friday at the a preseason game, he refused to stand during the playing of the national anthem. It's very customary in the country for everybody to get up and stand during the playing of the national anthem. Now, he said, he told press, "I'm not going to stand up to show pride in a flag for a country that oppresses black people and people of color." What he's specifically referring to here is the so-called Black Lives Matter movement, the concern about the number of young black and minority youths who might be, who are being shot by police officers. Now, this has sparked a lot of controversy. I'll just give you a little bit of a taste of it. Here's okay. Jasper J. 40, quote, "People are more upset by Colin Kaepernick not standing for the national anthem than they are about the treatment of those he's referring to. So there's a little support for him." Here's Matt Helling, quote, "Get the hell out of our country if you don't want to stand for our national anthem, Colin. This nation has made you millions. So that's just a little bit of a taste. Now, the team has responded. Colin Kaepernick says he is not. He's going to continue to sit out the national anthem. I don't know if people are maybe confused by this, if it's a big deal or not. There's no law that says everybody has to stand during the playing of the national anthem. But it is many people, I think, take it as an affront to the country, to its traditions, that sort of thing. Now, the team, 49ers, have released a statement, and they said in part, quote, "In respecting such American principles as freedom of religion and freedom of expression, we recognize the right of an individual to choose and participate or not in the celebration of our national anthem." So clearly, the 49ers management has his back. And the last quote that I wanted to read, this again from social media on his Twitter, Patrick Burke, over at the NHL, he tweeted out, quote, "If you celebrated Ali but condemn Kaepernick, then you never fully understood Ali." So clearly you can see there's a lot of resonance in this story, a lot of conversation.
What about his teammates, Doug? Have they come out in either supporting him or criticizing him?
There's been no criticism so far from his teammates. And now I haven't seen any criticism from other NFL players. Now, I didn't look too deep into that, so there might be some of that out there. Certainly one's right to express oneself by not standing at the national anthem would probably extend to one, expressing their frustration with such a gesture. So we'll watch that. But I think this is going to be something that continues to simmer for a while.
Doug, what else is trending out there in the sports world?
Well, of course, as you have mentioned, here we are at the beginning of the U.S. Open. It's day one. Big, exciting time in New York. Everybody playing. Nadal is playing. In fact, he's playing right now at the moment. Djokovic, Svetlana Kuznetsova is playing. Monfils, who I love watching, always a crowd favorite. And the hashtag U.S. Open is very big on Twitter right now and on Facebook. And it's interesting. You know, we saw some of this during the Olympics, but what we're seeing now is not so much people saying, well, there's people, you know, rooting for their favorite player, predicting this win or that win or this upset, but people seem to be sending out a lot of photographs, you know, JPEGs or GIFs, or as they're, I guess we're supposed to call them, GIFs, those moving
right.
those moving pictures. And, you know, just some of the amazing play that we've seen this year at the other Grand Slam tournaments. So just searching for that, hashtag U.S. Open, and then going through all those images, it's just a great reminder of the athleticism and the just the amazing power of these tennis players.
Doug, I also understand in New York, a different type of athletic competition caught your eye, so to speak.
Absolutely. One person calling it a freak win. So Saturday was the 147th running of the Traverse Stakes up at Saratoga Springs, one of the most storied races in American horse racing at probably America's most storied racing park. Now, there was a horse there called Arrowgate, and the betting was really shaky on him. Arrowgate is a big horse. He's a big chestnut, always monster-sized and always kind of a monster, actually, on the track. Trainer Bob Baffert, for a while, kept him out of competition like the, you know, some of the other Kentucky Derby and those kinds of runs because he just couldn't settle down. Well, he obviously settled down. He finished the mile and quarter traverse run in 1 minute 59 30, and 36 seconds. Now, that's a track record. And just to give you a measure as to how much of a record that is, he finished 13 and a half lengths ahead of his nearest rival.
Wow.
So yes. The photographs are amazing coming out of there. It's one of those almost, you know, sort of the old, not the Preakness, the Kentucky Derby, where the one, you know, riders looking back and sees this amazing length behind them. Another trainer, Steve Aspison, said, quote, "We just ran into a freak today." And jockey Mike Smith, speaking of social media, just tweeted out one thing, a thumbs up emoji.
VOA's Doug Bernard, thumbs up Doug, thank you.
Thank you.
And that wraps up the August 29th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Keith Holmes. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
After recent meetings in Nairobi with foreign ministers of a number of regional partners, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said that a regional protection force authorized by the United Nations Security Council is necessary to protect civilians in South Sudan's capital of Juba and to help facilitate the implementation of a peace accord reached by South Sudan's warring factions last year. The Security Council approved the Regional Protection Force within the United Nations mission in South Sudan on August 12th, after violence broke out in and around the capital between forces loyal to President Salva Kiir and former First Vice President Riek Machar. During the height of the July 7th to 11th violence, soldiers from both sides committed heinous crimes, including rape, murder, and wanton destruction of property. Government forces also attacked UN protection of civilian sites and a UN compound. Since 2013, when the conflict first started in South Sudan, the country has been ravaged, with thousands of people killed and over 2 million driven from their homes. Secretary Kerry noted that all the ministers who met in Nairobi agreed on the need for the deployment of the up to 4,000-member protection force authorized by the UN Security Council. Secretary Kerry emphasized that the force does not challenge the sovereignty of the country. It has, he said, a very clear mandate to protect people for their access, their freedom of movement, and their ability to remain free from attack or ambush from any source whatsoever. The hope is, he said, that the protection force will restore stability, will help the country to move faster to reconcile, will help by its presence alone provide assurance and confidence to people about the future. Mr. Kerry announced that the United States, which is the largest donor of humanitarian relief to the people of South Sudan, will give an additional $138 million toward that effort, bringing its total contribution to more than $1.7 billion. But the overwhelming need in the country, Mr. Kerry said, is to reinvigorate an inclusive political process and to implement the reforms that are set out in the peace agreement. Secretary of State Kerry urged the people of South Sudan to respect their countrymen as equal under the law and to demand that their leadership stop this fighting on an ethnic basis and get to the business of running the country in a responsible and inclusive way.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Next on Let's Talk, cohabitation, meaning to live together as if married, usually without legal or religious sanction. What are the benefits and consequences? Join host Sunday Shomari and his guests discussing cohabitation. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
In our next edition of Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth discussion on democracy and the rule of law in Uganda, join us right here on Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
Hello, Africa music fans. We have hours of the music that you love every day. From the north to the south and the east to the west, we play only the best. Tune in at 0100, 0200, 1200 and 1300 UTC GMT right here on VOA Africa.
Do you know the political process that determines who the next president of the United States will be? Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the campaigns, the voting, and the final tallying to find out how citizens choose their next president. Right here on VOA.